The department as to what is the progress that has been made in ILO conference that took place this year from the 2nd to the 18th of July. And after that, there will be two speakers from Blacksash, the researcher, and then we can have discussions. I think the purpose, as they're saying, is to strengthen the gains that have been achieved by that conference as South African in order to move forward in addressing the issue of domestic workers. I wish to thank them on behalf of the committee to be ahead, because sort of ahead, we have just come back with the department from ILO, and definitely the department is going to tell us what is that they are busy with, starting from where when we left Switzerland to date, and what is that they are intending to do to show that they are also on board in addressing these issues. But of course, as the government, there is still to have to go different processes before we come to the finalities of addressing the problems of domestic workers. Now, I will start. Can we start with the introduction of all the members who are here? But there's something, I think, Honorable Law, you want to comment on the introduction?
Honorable Olive, if it's just a question, I'm very keen to hear this presentation.
Honorable Lawless.
Yes. I'm very keen to hear this presentation. It sounds very interesting, and it will be very helpful to us. I just have a question about our program, the program that we adopted. The last 2 weeks, we've changed the program according to what was on the schedule. What has happened to the presentation on the law? There was a presentation on legislation, and it seems to have disappeared.
Can you talk about the program, Honorable Law, when we get... We can sit after this meeting and then talk about the program, because the program is... keeps on changing. When we adopted the program, we said we will be changing the program now and again. And I think if Blacksash was in that program from the beginning. But let's talk about it after that. I will allow Ms. Siseliso Ngomo to introduce herself in detail, just designation and the organization, and then we'll go that side.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Peli Sangomo. I'm the National Advocacy Program Manager for Blacksash.
Yeah? My name is Emma Creel. I'm the author of a book called Close the Door Softly Behind You, where I tell how I went overseas and worked as a domestic worker and subsequently wrote an open letter of apology to all the ladies that worked for me. And my daughter is with me, Shanda Vai. She's with me.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Elizabeth Fry. I'm a domestic worker and I'm from Satsao.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Christine and I'm a domestic housekeeper and I'm
Tomsatsawa.
Good morning, I'm Michael Polak and I'm an intern here with Black Sash and I've been helping prepare their domestic workers campaign.
Good morning, my name is Antiswa Pete. I'm an advocacy intern for Black Sash.
Good morning, my name is Cathy Adamo Yalandi. I'm from Kosatu.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tembisa Nonzale. I'm from Catholic Welfare and Development, working as a placement officer in one of its projects called Zanokanyo in Khayelitsha.
Good morning. My name is Anna Kruta. I'm from Zaza, domestic worker.
Good morning. My name is Myrtle Westbury, and I'm the General Secretary of the South African Domestic Workers Union.
Hello, everybody. I'm Kate Shuttleworth from Marvelous Maids, South Africa's premier domestic agency, and we are right across the country placing domestic workers in top jobs around the country.
Good morning. I'm Claire Shuttleworth-Richardson, also from Marvelous Maids.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Ratabile from Kosatu, doing the Proud South African project. Thank you.
From Social Law Project. Thank you.
Morning, I'm Les Gettelgas, Deputy Director General, Department of Labor.
My name is Boiki Mampuru. I'm the Manager, Inspection Enforcement, Department of Labor.
Good morning. My name is Fairuz Mulaji. I'm a researcher at the Social Law Project, UWC.
Good morning. My name is Andy Somakasi. I'm from Social Law Project, UWC. I'm coordinator there, and I'm also a researcher.
Good morning. My name is Virgil Seafield from the Department of Labor.
Good morning. My name is Sean Selton, Department of Labor.
Good morning, my name is Salim Patel from the Labour Research Service.
Good morning, Darcy Detoy from the Social Law Project Faculty of Law, University of Western Cape.
Good morning, my name is Sophia Rassazon and I'm an intern at the Labour Research Service.
Greetings everyone, my name is Jonathan Grossman. I'm from a project called Masabelane, and which has worked in support of domestic workers through SADWU, then NADWU, and now SATSAWU.
Good morning, I'm Michelle Present. I coordinate our program, the Global Network, at the Labour Research Services.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Rosaina Fumba. I'm a domestic worker.
Please assist the lady with the mic. Can she?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Regina Fumba. I'm a domestic worker.
My name is Linda Kabeni. I'm working for Soweto Journalist.
Morning. My name is Nzobang Chigazana. I work for the Department of Labor.
Morning, everyone. My name is Dixon Benika Mukono. I'm a parliamentarizing officer in the Ministry of Labour.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Joanna Boyson. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Your chairperson, I'm Ian Ollis, Democratic Alliance Labour spokesperson.
Good morning, and I'm William Adisha from the Congress of the People.
Good morning, I'm Eric Nyagamba from the ANC.
I'm Nokaya Mnisi, the member of the committee.
From the ANC.
Right.
My name is Alina Ramzulasi. I'm from the ANC. Thank you. We also have two assistants for the committee. The committee secretary next to me, that's the person who's been communicating with Albertina Pakaja, and the assistant, Nozuko Nyovu. Now, we will give the opportunity to the Department of Labor to reflect on what took place in Switzerland in relation to the plight of domestic workers. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. We were caught a bit off guard since we were not under the impression that we needed to do a presentation. We were just supposed to be as observers, but be that as it may, I think we could add some value to the discussion. Firstly, let me just say that the discussion at the ILO on decent work for domestic workers was the first discussion on the issue. The ILO has the office of the ILO has put this on the agenda with the intention to establish a decent working conditions for domestic work, and the debate at the ILO fundamentally centered around firstly whether there should be what instrument should be developed for domestic workers, whether it should take the form of a convention and a recommendation, or whether it should only be a recommendation. And I think that was the first critical debate at the ILO at that stage. The proposal or recommendation that a convention with a recommendation, the instrument should take the form of a convention and a recommendation, was overwhelmingly supported both by labor and by government. Although at some point business, organized business had critical concerns around whether it should be a convention at all. And I think that is the first debate that took place at the ILO. The second debate issue was what should then be the conditions that are set within the recommendation within the proposed convention. And the discussions then centered around, and one should remember that this is the first round of the discussions on the proposed instrument. At the ILO, there are normally two types of discussions that take place, and this is what they would call a double discussion, double round of discussion, if you will. So that the first issue that was on the table was just to set the scene fundamentally for decent work for domestic workers. All the issues that were on the table during the last discussion will be reopened again at the next discussion. And after that, then there will be an adoption of either a recommendation and a convention or whatever the form of the instrument should be. You should remember that at the ILO, the nature of the instrument can change again at the next discussion. So therefore, what is currently on the table is a proposal for a convention with a recommendation. There are a number of areas that were discussed around the proposed convention. Fundamentally, centers around what are decent work, what constitutes decent work for domestic work, and a number of areas have been identified in the proposed convention. In looking at what our current situation is in relationship to the proposal that is currently on the table, we can confidently say as a government that we would be able to ratify that convention as quickly as it comes out, because for all intents and purposes, we have covered almost all of the areas that are within the convention. There are two areas that still remains for that one would have to look at. One is the issue on how you deal with migration within the context of domestic workers. To what extent do you provide additional protection for those migrant workers in domestic workers? And I think that is one area that we as a country will not be able to have answers right now to that. Fundamentally, what it does is to place the burden on the employer for the cost of repatriation, and that is the proposal that is within the convention. The second area that we think we may have some concerns with the convention is in relationship to social protection. We have done some work with respect to the extension of social protection. The convention currently requires, or the proposal that is on the table currently requires progressive protection for domestic workers. And to some extent we have done, so domestic workers are covered, for example, by UIS. There's still some debate in terms of how they will be covered in terms of COIDA. But we have also published an intent to establish a provident fund for domestic workers. So the social protection net we want to extend progressively to domestic workers. So for all intents and purposes, if we have to ratify the convention, we won't have a lot of difficulty in terms of that. I think just for setting the scene, I think those are the critical areas that are within the convention. We will go back to the ILO during the course of next year to finalize the discussion, and we hope that emerging out of the discussions at the ILO, there will be a convention and a recommendation that emerges out of that discussion. But I think just in terms of setting the scene, I think let me stop there so that. People could have a discussion on those issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Department of Labor. At least that's the introduction of what took place in the ILO conference. And I will give an opportunity to the guests around the house, since in front of me, I have Ms. Andiswa Makhazi from Black Cells.
No, from UWC, Social Law Project.
So, okay. My apologies. Marantula?
Yeah, maybe when the organization, which I hear, start talking first, if the tool is not yet ratified by the South African government, what is the influence which they'll want us to do? I should think of when they can start there. Because if the tool is here, it's not yet even completed, it's a South African government who had not even ratified, so that you can give us what is it that you are expecting out of the process. Because the process shouldn't suggest that what has been deliberated at ILO is yet concluded. So it was the first phase discussion. There's no yet final convention which it can give all member countries the right to go and make an instrument. I think like the Department of Labor is saying, maybe we need to say how you want us. Are you influencing this document of ILO in the next debate? Because we can only influence the document after, we can only use the document after it has been ratified, adopted also by ILO. So I should think as they present, they must clarify us what process they want us to take this to, because this is not yet a tool. It's an ordinary document for discussion, and then how we want us, how you want to see your influence to the document. Thank you.
I'll give over to Ms. Ngomo to say something on this question. However, I think that it's good for the organization inside after the conference to hear from the department that was the representing South Africa in terms of the discussions. And if there are things that they want to say, since the process is not concluded, they can voice their opinion. I don't think there'll be a harm, because it's like they are reporting back to the people, and then the people will say something. But Ms. Ngomo has an answer to to what you have just said, Marlene.
Thank you, Chair. Just to quickly say that, Honourable, your questions will be actually responded to by the next speaker, which is Andiswa, and as well as Otau, and you'll see how actually we seek to use this dialogue going forward in terms of strengthening. I think if you look at the objective of today, the intention is to strengthen what some of the gains that have emerged and how do we tighten up the loopholes, and the next presentation will exactly speak to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I have to start by painting a picture about who Social Project is and why we're here today. We are, as previously mentioned, based at the University of the Western Cape. We are attached to the Faculty of Law. Social Project is a small unit that is involved in training and research in the field of labor law as well as social security law. When BlackSash invited us to become part of today's dialogue, we saw it as a great opportunity in order to address the PPC in terms of the findings, in terms of the research that we've undertaken as a unit, and I'm hoping to share those with you today, and we're hoping to be on the same page in terms of what we've done, and most importantly, where we intend to go. I did not prepare a speech. I must apologize. I felt it would be best that instead of preparing a speech, I rather share with you what Social Project has come up with in terms of the research that has been conducted. And I'm going to be doing that through the presentation that I'm going to be sharing with you. And I trust it will address most of the issues that have already come up today. The aim, why we're here today, I've already mentioned, we intend to share the findings from DWRP. What is DWRP? It's the Domestic Workers Research Project undertaken by Social Law Project. What does Domestic Workers Research Project aim to do? Well, in short, to investigate the efficacy of sexual termination, which is one of the reasons why we're here today. I'm not sure whether we are all familiar with what SD7 is, but it is the law that regulates the domestic workers sector. And so I'm just going to continue referring to it as SD7 and assume that we are all on the same page. Copies have been made for those who are not familiar with SD7. I think they're over there for those of us who do not have copies. In order to paint a picture into what I'm going to be sharing with you, I have to explain that in investigating the efficacy of SD7, i.e., how effective is SD7? It was promulgated in 2002. We're now in 2010. Has it met its objectives? One of its main objectives was to set basic conditions of employment for the domestic worker industry and set minimum wages, which was a first for this industry as at 2002. There were other objectives, but those two are the ones that stem out. We looked at it from various themes. I'm not going to go into detail into them now because they're not for this session, but I have to mention that in investigating whether SD7 has met its objectives, we looked at it from four perspectives. The first being the aspect of human rights. Human rights apply to everybody, and so should to domestic workers. But research has found that the right to equality, the right to dignity, the right to not be subjected to unfair labor practices, the right to freedom of speech, I can go on, all the rights in the BOE, those do not seem to be extended to domestic workers. Yet the law says they are. Why is it that they are not extended to domestic workers? Compliance and enforcement. SD7 is regulated and enforced by the Department of Labor. I'm actually very happy to see the Department of Labor here today. Maybe they can come in when we ask the question, why is it that SD7 is not complied with? Complied with by who? The employers. Enforced by who? DOL. The DOL inspectors, Department of Labor inspectors.
why is it that as of 2010, we still find cases where employers do not comply with ST7, they don't meet the minimum requirements when it comes to domestic workers in terms of basic conditions of employment and the minimum wage, and why is DOL not vigorously enforcing ST7? Migrant domestic workers, we have a lot of domestic workers from our neighboring countries. They are domestic workers in our houses, but for some reason, they are treated differently. Why? They're doing the same job, supposed to be getting the same treatment, but because they may or may not have the necessary paperwork to be in the country, they are treated differently. Why? And last aspect is that of empowerment and organizing of domestic workers. Why are domestic workers not properly organized? Why are they not members of a trade union? Why is it that if a domestic worker joins a trade union, they feel that my madam is going to tell me, you can go speak to your minister, I'm paying you the minimum. I'm not going to go into details, but that is just the four perspectives from which the research was conducted from, and I will invite members to go into our website should you require more information. The findings I'm about to show you, I must confess, I've extracted only the relevant ones. The research we undertook started last year. I would not be able to complete all of that today, so I just extracted the ones that I find relevant for today's session, and we took those from the literature review, the books that we read, the legislation, mainly ST7, and all the accompanying labor and employment legislation, the articles that have been written, and all the newspaper articles that we read about every day. The survey. We conducted a survey in the three national cities, Cape Town, Durban, and Johannesburg. We spoke to employers, we spoke to domestic workers, we spoke to DOL, and we spoke to trade union officials. And lastly, we conducted focus group workshops. The focus group workshops were small, intimate gatherings with domestic workers, and recently we also conducted focus group workshops with the Department of Labor inspectors, where we were able to share our concerns with them, and together we were able to try and find solutions that we want this platform in particular to take forward in our objective to pursue the rights of domestic workers. And if anyone requires more information, I'd invite you to visit our website, which is www.dwrp.org.za. I mentioned I've only selected a few findings, and the first one that I cannot start today's talk without mentioning is that of minimum wage. When the survey was conducted, it was in 2009. The minimum wage at the time was 1,340 for those in the urban areas. If I ask you to look at the slide, sorry, the diagram in front of you, and I ask you to go to the second last row where you would see that there was an average of about 23% of domestic workers who were receiving just above the minimum wage at the time, which was 1.340, rounded off there to 1.350. And that's in 2009 when that was conducted. It's alarming if you consider that in figures. The number of domestic workers that were interviewed for the purposes of the survey were 600. The difference there in the yellow and the blue refers to those domestic workers who belong to a union, and the yellow refers to unionized domestic workers, and the blue refers to non-unionized domestic workers, which really reflects the difference between those who are empowered, i.e. have someone to speak on their behalf, and those who do not have a union. I'm not going to get into details now, but if you look at that, the average of that is around 23%, and if you consider the number being 600, that would give you, of the 600 domestic workers that were interviewed, only 138 were receiving above 1.350. Just above that, you have the threshold of 1.350, and there the average is 11%. 11% of 600 is 66 domestic workers. Sure, it's only just a sample. It was, of course, a survey. We couldn't afford to, at the time, go to all the cities. We intend to, But for the purposes of today, if you consider that only 11% as of 2009 were receiving the minimum wage, and that's in an urban area, it's quite shocking. The question then is, why are employers not paying the minimum, or those who not, and why is Dole not on their cases? Moving on. Next question that was asked, this question was asked to domestic workers. Are you aware of any specific laws that are applicable to you as a domestic worker? The first row there refers to those who belong to a union, and of those, only 65% of the 600 being 99 domestic workers, the figure, 99 of those who belong to a union. The number there is 152 for those who are unable to see. Only 99 indicated that they actually are aware. We are in 2010 now. This was conducted in 2009. It's alarming when you see stats like this. Dole says they're raising awareness, but if one goes out to the field and actually asks people, are you aware? Domestic workers, only 65% said yes, and alarming 34% said no. If you go to the row below that, it refers to those who do not belong to a union, reflecting the role that a union night employee may have, rather the role that a union may have incapacitating that domestic worker. 80% said, I am not aware of any specific laws. It's 2009 and ST7 came up in 2002. Dole, why is this so? The next slide pertains to the question that was asked to employers. Employers were asked, have you registered your domestic worker for UIF, and are you aware of any legislation pertaining to domestic workers? There, an alarming 56% said that they were aware. The 56% being there, 200 employers were questioned. Also in Cape Town, Durban, as well as Johannesburg and Pretoria. Of the 200 employers, an alarming 41.4% said yes, they had registered their domestic workers for UIF, and shockingly, 58.6% had said they not. When asked the question, are you aware of any legislation that protects domestic workers or that covers the domestic worker sector? Yes, the answer there was 56.2%, giving a figure of 102 employers out of 200, and a shocking 87 employers said they are not aware of any legislation. Having spoken to the various employers, trade union officials, employees, as well as Dole themselves, when asked about ST7, everyone confessed, yes, there has been progress, considering that domestic workers now have rights and are protected by the law, and they have the following benefits given to them. As they've already been mentioned, I'm just going to go quickly through them. The UIF, the prescribed minimum wage, and the working hours. They have leave rules, and unlike in the previous days, they now have termination rules. They can't just be told, leave my premises. There's a procedure to be followed, and if that procedure is not followed, a domestic worker may now go to the CCMA. So that is progress identified. Also, there is a change of attitude that's been noted in terms of some employers towards domestic workers. And I'm saying some because the sample is only representative of the few that were interviewed. Many require a change of attitude, or they require training workshops, or they require awareness in that a lot of people still do not know, and they're still ill-treating their domestic workers, and most importantly, they're not registering them for UIF. Constraints identified by all those who were part of the research. A shocking rate in terms of knowledge and awareness of ST7.
not just amongst employers, but amongst domestic workers as well. It is felt that insufficient knowledge exists out there and more should be done by DOL. The powers of the inspectors, it is felt that these are constrained themselves. They feel, although they are empowered to enforce FT7, their powers limit them to a great extent. Section 65, subsection 2 of the BCEA, which pertains to the powers of entry, when an inspector goes to a domestic worker's premises, being where the employer's home, they do feel that it is a constraint itself. The COIBDA exclusion, it was mentioned already, that there's moved towards that. Domestic workers are not covered by COIBDA. And another constraint is that there isn't a bargaining council or a forum specifically set for the domestic workers, and for that, there needs to be one that can concentrate on the domestic workers sector. Suggestions that have been brought forward, which I feel together in this room, we can try and find some solution in terms of taking them forward or taking the necessary steps in order to bring them to light. Awareness comes up quite a lot, and this is awareness of ST7 by the Department of Labor to employers. A lot of employers do not know that they're domestic workers or refuse to acknowledge. A lot of employers do not know that they're domestic worker employers or refuse to see themselves as employers of domestic workers. Just because she comes in once a day, I'm not an employer. So there's a great deal of mindset or perception change that needs to be done in order to target everyone who has someone helping them iron a shirt in their home, look after your child at home, etc. A lot of people don't see themselves as domestic worker employers, and most importantly, do not know about ST7 or what ST7 entails. There has to be awareness by the employer duties. There are rights as well as obligations for the employer as well as the employee. I've already mentioned ST7 as well as the complementary legislation, being the Labor Relations Act, the Basic Conditions of Employment. I can go on. What steps may those progressive employers take in order to improve compliance? Or what steps can DOL bring about to ensure that there's a great deal of improvement in terms of compliance? And I'm putting this to DOL. There needs to be a lot of awareness complaints, and it is felt that the community newspapers are not included sufficiently in this regard. Only your elite papers are targeted, yet it is felt that there's a lot of exclusion in that area, and it is also felt, or the research has found, the people that we interviewed have asked us to request that awareness campaigns are also published in all languages, because they're still restricted to mainly English, Afrikaans, and Xhosa, but even then it's mainly English, and social structures are excluded quite a lot. I'm saying this because it has been put to us that they have quite a role that they play in the community, and if they're excluded, they are unable to pursue the same objective that we are all in this room pursuing, i.e. the advancement of domestic worker rights. I'm not sure if this is the correct forum, but I'm going to do it anyway, because I see DOL here. There have been some requests that those who are compliant need to be put on a platform, i.e. an employer database, where they're given a medal or a platform at which they can shine for treating their domestic workers correctly, because there are a few good employers, but then again, I underline few. There should be a request for tax release. I'm not sure how, but it's an area that can be considerably investigated, and I'm putting it to this forum to see what can be done in order to bring about that reward to those good employers. Car stickers for employers, e.g., I treat my domestic worker with respect. Seems like a small thing, but it was explained to us. It actually came from an inspector, a DOL inspector, that if you read that on your car, if a person puts that on their car, it not only gives recognition to that domestic worker in the house, but it also makes them feel empowered and respected that my madam is so proud that she's willing to show her colleagues that she's doing the right thing. I recently saw an ad from Dole at Grindhouse on national TV saying the same thing. I treat my domestic worker with respect. So there is an ad, but now we're putting it to Dole to put out car stickers or something of the sort. And again, someone requested that there can be some certificate of good standing. I know it's done by Dole to those companies that have met all the required thresholds in terms of the labor requirements. So if something like that can come up, then maybe Dole can look it up. And even this forum, because this forum can also assist Dole in that. Measures to punish non-complying employers. As opposed to a good employer database, there can be a name and shame database where those who are not treating their employers fairly and with respect can be put in the database. Requests keep coming up for URF transgressors because it is felt that at the moment there isn't much being done by Dole for those who don't pay their who do not register their domestic workers for URF. And even so, it's quite a lengthy process. By the time that relief comes, it's 3 years down the line. One request that came up is that, as with traffic officers, can stop you if you're speeding or if you're driving on the emergency lane, for example, they can issue with a spot fine. Maybe something similar can be done by the inspectors when they visit the homes, where they can issue spot fines to employers who are not complying with ST7 and other company legislation. The reason for this is because the process itself is quite lengthy, and by the time it actually reaches the courts, which is not always desirable, it's too late for that domestic worker at home. Sometimes there is some mediation and some compromises reached, but if that is not reached, then they have to go to the court, and that can be quite lengthy. Suggested changes or review of the legislation. Here, I'm going to bring your attention to Section 17 of the Labor Relations Act, Section 17 as well as Section 65 of the BCEA. These two need to be either deleted or reviewed, and I'm opening it to this platform to see what can be done about that. Section 17 of the LRA speaks about the restricted rights in the domestic worker sector. And in particular, it says that the domestic sector means the employment of employees engaged in domestic work in the employer's homes or on property on which the home is situated. But if you go to the very last sentence, which is 2B, it excludes the domestic worker, i.e., the rights of disclosure of information do not apply to the sector. Trade unions cannot have access to premises because it's a private home. So they find this as a constraint. They are unable to do what they normally do, i.e. first access the home because they cannot enter the home because it's a private home. Another constraint is Section 65 of the BCEA, which speaks about the powers of entry. Section 65 says, in order to monitor and enforce compliance with an employment law, a labor inspector may, with or without warrant, at any reasonable time, enter any workplace or any place where an employer carries on business or keeps employment records. However, it must not be a private home. This raises questions as to whose right is more important, the private property rights, i.e., you are on private property belonging to the employer, or the domestic workers' rights, i.e., this is my workplace. Now, when an inspector goes there and they are told, I'm not allowed to let you in, that's it. They have to obviously apply in terms of Section 65(3) of the labor, of the BCEA, in order to get an order from the labor court to allow them entry into that home. But that's time consuming. I know this requires constitutional challenge, but I'm hoping this platform can come up with suggestions as to how this can be circumvented. Perhaps it can go to the labor court, I'm not sure. So to the constitutional court, I'm not sure. But it is one that requires a lot of engagement. How do we get around that constraint? It's a private home. Whose right is more is to be valued more, that of the employer or that of the employee. Domestic workers continue to be excluded a lot from Social Security. Inclusion of the requesting that child be included in the UIF registration in terms of Department of Labor's UIF. However, at the moment, the requirement is that one must work a minimum of 24 hours per month, and if one works Mondays by someone else, Tuesdays by someone else, and Wednesdays by someone else, even though it comes to more than 24 hours a month, because that one employer, she only works on Mondays or she only works half a day, cumulatively, they make up 24, but in order for one employer to register that domestic worker, they are unable to end that, they are unable to register for UIF, and that domestic worker is left out. COID has been mentioned quite a lot. There's a lot of accidents happening at home, water spills, when one is taking out the washing, dogs, I can go on, but domestic workers are not covered by that. Why? There's a request that the child minors and caregivers, that this be seen as skilled work that will, that can go to the extent of being covered by the skills developed sitters, yeah, by the sitters, and I'm hoping that this platform can help us move forward with that. And as has already been mentioned, that there should be a provision of a retirement fund for long-term employees. And there's also been a request that perhaps ST7 can put in the inclusion of a provision of a savings check in ST7, which currently is not there. It's at the discussion of that particular employer, but it's not in ST7. Just two more slides and I'm almost done. It's also been requested that there should be a figure for the night work allowance. Currently, clause 3, subsection 2, subsection A of ST7 speaks of a daily wage, and but unfortunately that is not there. So one can pay you 1 rand, one can pay you 10 rand, one can pay you 100 rand. So there isn't a figure, and it is requested that there should be a figure, for example, 10% of one's daily wage. It's also been requested that there should be an increase in the 20 rand standby allowance as per clause 14.2 of ST7. It's also been requested that the undertaking made by inspectors in terms of section 68 of the BCA must be made in order. If an inspector goes to a home and they find that there's been a transgression, they can issue an undertaking. However, they have to do that with and give that particular employer a time period within which to correct that, and they must come back. And then they apply to go. They can apply to make it a labour court order. Time consuming. The request is that that should be ordered immediately. Again, more powers to inspectors. It's requested that the example here came. This request came as a result of an example where an employer can simply say, "I did not receive the subpoena." They must come back. They must start the process or they don't sign, whereas if one sticks a subpoena on the door immediately, then it's considered as served, and that shortens the process quite considerably. I've already mentioned power authority of inspectors to issue spot fines. For doors, it's been requested that they should conduct focus group for domestic workers in order to share these issues with them, and so they can also share their stories and suggestions with the door further. DOR must conduct focus group workshops, that workshops for inspectors, including how to deal with undocumented workers in the country. We found that even though DOR inspectors are fully cognizant of ST7, they're not fully cognizant of other legislation, and that sometimes you might find that there's a difference of opinion. DOR inspectors are on the same page as to how to treat undocumented workers in the country. So it's requested that that is done as well. Vigorous enforcement by DOR keeps coming up. This is an issue related to the shortage of inspectors, and should there be more inspectors, there can be visibility as well as more capacity by inspectors. It's requested that employers should meet with domestic workers. Sorry. It is requested that DOR must meet with employers to discuss how they can curb xenophobia in the country. It
This request came as a result of an example that was made that employers continue to hire those workers who do not know their rights, who are in the country illegally, and will, as a result, work for less than the minimum wage. This then sparks about xenophobia in the community and what can be done by DOS to curb this in the society. It's been requested that because there's so few inspectors, DOL can get the inspectors to specialize. Because currently, I think in the Western Cape, I speak under corrections, there's about 90 inspectors for the Cape Metropole and Southern Metropole, and they're not only enforcing ST7, they're enforcing 14 other sectoral terminations and other legislation as well. They're clearly incapacitated. And in general, it is felt that the townships are not targeted enough. Blitz operations that are conducted by DOL, and even, for example, the survey that we conducted, it was felt that we didn't go to the township. There are a lot of transgressions there. We've read in the newspapers about transgressions in the townships, as well as the poor rural areas, particularly from those bogus employment agency where they take workers from the rural areas under false pretenses and then they exploit them in the city. So there's a lot of work to be done there. I've already mentioned other stakeholders involved, i.e. CCMA, NGO, social services, that can help in pushing forward the agenda that we hear for today. Civil society funding to be targeted to capacitate NGOs. NGOs do quite a lot of work out there that I'm not sure if most of the people in this room are aware of, but they lack funding. So if they could be funded, they could help pursue the same objective that we are all pursuing today, yet they continue to be neglected, yet they are the ones that most domestic workers approach for advice, those who do not have, who don't belong to a union, and if they can be brought into the same forum, they can help push forward the same agenda. It's been requested that trade unions must educate their members about ST7 and accompanying legislation, and the biggest request was for the formation of an employers organization. No Blacksash today was able to target us from various organizations that we work for, but it is very difficult for one to, firstly, it's difficult for people to identify themselves as domestic worker employers, but now for them to form an organization, it's quite difficult. So I'm not sure in whose to-do list that should be on, but there should be an employers organization where such sessions as this or issues are brought to, and then together we can move forward. It is my intention, sorry, it is our intention that today's dialogue will assist in bringing about the required change, noting the suggestions that have been made and the findings from the research in advancing the rights of domestic workers, not just in South Africa, but globally as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marcus. We have a limitation of time. I did speak to Ms. Ngoma, and she's aware that at 2 o'clock the members must be back in the house. And I would request from the speakers that bring the issues, all these issues are very important, but we have to bring up issues, for instance, that you think that department has never heard of, or they need more in terms of you telling them what is that they have to do. And I think department, from now on, starting from today, you have a responsibility of going around the country organizing these workshops of domestic workers so that
you can tell them where are you in terms of addressing the issues. It's not something that is within the top, the knowledge of why you still have a problem, for instance, of not enforcing the law in certain areas. I listened to the research. Is a very good research because it starts from the problems, telling us what are the problems that are there, and then identify the progress that has been made, and go further in suggestions and the concerns that you have. But I think it is important that those people that we seek to protect, they must also know, so that tomorrow they don't say that the department is folding arms, the laws are there, but there is very little that the department is doing. So it's important that you talk to the people directly, because there might be some misunderstanding of things, that you are doing nothing when it comes to these issues, yet you have concerns that you have put in front of Parliament, where you need Parliament to assist you in certain things, enforcing the laws that we have passed in this Parliament. We know, but it is not only for us to know, but those who are affected, so that we all participate in coming up with the solutions. So I'm sure your trade unions, your black sales, they will assist you in putting these people together so that you talk to them directly. Thank you, Ms. McCarthy, once more. We are not going to engage on this presentation. Let's listen to all other presentations so that by the time we ask questions or we comment, we can comment on the issues that have been raised. Because my fear is to stick to one, discuss this presentation, and then by the time we finish the conversation, we have very little time to discuss other conversations. So if we listen to all these conversations, then we'll take the most important issues that we think we can't miss this opportunity not to raise those issues and do that. We needed more time. But I thought that we're only going to focus on ILO conference progress on domestic workers. So I will give over to Ms. Lynette Vetboy, Nettle Vetboy from SASAO.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank your honorable chairperson. I want to thank the members of parliament for allowing us to be here this morning. I'm also sure that it's the first time that some of the domestic workers have seen the inside of Parliament, and for that we are very grateful. I'm sure that many of you here know about SAGU, you know about the domestic worker struggle, and I have to bring a point across. Even before Kusatu was born, the South African domestic workers was already there campaigning for a workers' right. As all of you are here, most of you are employers, and it's a pity that some of you did not bring your domestic workers here this morning, but we hope for the next time when we will see all your domestic workers. We have been fortunate, and I myself have been fortunate to be involved with domestic workers for the last 43 years. Being a former domestic worker myself, I've also been honored to chair the domestic workers network in the world that takes the campaign to the ILO. But I also have to say, after listening to Andishwa, yes, we have all the negative things. Yes, but there is also a lot of good within South Africa. We, since the year 1994, domestic workers have had a breakthrough. Domestic workers have seen many labor laws extended to them. And for them, we thank you. Of course, the implementation is something else that we need to work on, like your honorable chairperson has said. But coming to the ILO, yeah, again, we need to thank our comrade Virgil for taking such a strong lead at the ILO. We have to stay as domestic workers of South Africa that was there. We were very proud to be of South Africa. We were very proud that we could actually stand up there and say, but all those things that you're campaigning here and fighting about, we do have it in South Africa. We just need to find a way of how we can bring it across. We also find that, yes, we do have the same problem. And I must just say to you, I have a problem of reading speeches from paper. I like to bring out what's inside of me, but I will give this to you to afterwards distribute amongst you. That there was a lot of key issues at the ILO. There was a lot of things that was lacking in the world. There was a lot of suffering exposed of domestic workers. And the most important thing is, why is domestic work not recognized as decent work? What is it that we do that we don't get recognition that we do a decent work? We are contributing to the economy. By just being there in your homes, we are building the economy in a silent way. Because if we are not there cleaning your homes and looking after your properties, you cannot build the economy. So in that way, we want that. We want to get recognition as workers that has contributed to the country. We want a living wage. Yes, there is a lack of a living wage in South Africa. Domestic workers cannot cope on the wages that we get. We want the protection of our human rights. That's what we want at the ILO. We also want to be part, and we want to see the migrant workers as part of us in South Africa. We want to embrace them because they suffer just like other workers in the country. We are also very concerned that the employers keep on fighting us at the ILO. The employers seem to not to want the convention with strong recommendations. And that is why we are here today. We are here today, our comrades from the ANC ask, what do you want us to do? Why are you here today? We are here today to say to you, what do we want you to do? As to the domestic workers, it's not about one political party. We work for all of you, which means we need the support of all political parties in South Africa. We need you to support us. We want an ongoing awareness going from Parliament. We want it to be addressed, the issues that facing domestic workers in the world and in South Africa. We know, like Andishwa was saying, we know we don't have social protection benefits. We know there's a lack of the Compensation Act in South Africa. There's so many issues, the COIDA, there's so many issues that still evading domestic workers. But we feel that this could be the start of a talking point. This could be the start where we could address issues, where we can address Parliament on what is that really affecting domestic workers. You know, the ILO made a statement. They say it's the first time in the history of the ILO that they have domestic workers present at the ILO. It was the first time they had emotional outbursts, that it was time that they had to tell us to quiet, to be quiet, to respect. But it was such an emotional issue to think that here we are at the ILO, but yet we haven't had the experience to sit in our own parliament to tell them, this is why we are here, this is what we want. And we have to admit that, yes, Virgil did his homework very well. He knew what we want, and he pushed on that. And therefore, he could lead Africa into the convention. But a convention could be watered down next year. So that is where the support. What do we want? We want domestic workers to understand their rights. We want domestic workers to be recognized as women that has contributed. We want domestic workers to have social human rights. That is what we want. But we cannot do it without our government. We need our government. If we don't get the government support in the world, we will fail at the ILO. And all the strong resolutions and the strong recommendations we have from South Africa will fall away. So we're saying to you, let us start here today. Let us have petitions signed in Parliament. Let us put all the rights that domestic workers want. Let all the parliamentaries sign. Yes, we do support Tatsau. Yes, we do support our government when they stand out there next year and fight for domestic workers' rights. There is a lot of governments that is resisting the convention. There is a lot of governments that we work. Currently, we are traveling the world to talk to those governments. Namibia already debated the issue in government. They are supporting us. We know South Africa. But we want to see debate here. We want to hear the parliamentary voices out there. When domestic workers is working in the houses, they want to hear that you are talking about them. You are talking about giving them back what they have contributed to this country. So here we say, we, our role is to lobby you, our role is to talk to you, our role is to say to you, let's take this resolution, it's a very heavy pack, and let us study the resolutions. Let us know what's going to happen next year. Let's not just say next year, oh yes, they know what they're talking about, but let we as women, together with men, let me know when domestic workers are talking about their rights, we agree. We know what they're talking about. They're not talking something that South Africa didn't say, go speak there. So therefore, one important fact is we want recognition. Domestic work is decent work. When they talk about other work, they always exclude domestic workers. And we want a commitment from our government. We want a commitment that next year our government will fully support us. Our government will stand behind us. Our government support, whatever we bring up there, already we got a support, yes, from our government, but we need much more. We need you, the woman, we need you. And in that way, we can go forward. Then what do we need South Africa to do? We need our government to look at the social security for domestic workers. We need us to look at the current wage. We know it's coming up, but we need us to look at it. We need to look at housing for domestic workers. You know, domestic workers don't have access to housing because they don't earn enough. We need to have an open debate with banks on how domestic workers can have houses. We need to look at the compensation act, because if a domestic worker hurts herself, she loses out completely. She don't get paid because there's no compensation act for her. And then we also need to look at the labor brokers. We need to look at the agencies. We need to look at those that abide by the rules and those that are still exploiting the domestic workers. We find that now there are some agencies within our own areas that are exploiting the migrant workers. We cannot allow that because domestic workers are all doing the same work. We are not giving gloves because I'm a different color. We are all doing the same work. We all scrub the same floor. We all work for it low wages. So we need to have that campaign on our workers to unite domestic workers in the world and to speak up for all workers, not just for South Africa. And we as a South have made it vow to ourselves that we need to lead that convention next year. We need to lead that campaign, and we need to ensure that when we come back to South Africa, we are going to say domestic work is decent work, and we are going to celebrate that we are free. Yes, domestic workers are free. And as women, South Africa, you have given us back our dignity and our pride. There is many problems. There are some domestic workers that can speak about the problems. There's Andishwa. But our aim is now to get the social protection, to get the compensation act, and to know that next year when we stand up as South Africa, we can truly say, yes, South Africa, you did us proud. We are proud to stand here today and speak about our country. I hope I'm giving you things for thought. I will give you the papers and they can make copies. And I hope that when you get out here, you will remember that worker in your house and you will look at her with different eyes. I owe it to you to see that you get a convention next year. I thank you all. Thank you, Miss Maitre.
I think your contribution is very loud and clear, and fortunately you were there. So all you want to be recognized is that when the government goes there, must take your voices with them as well. They should listen to you so that when they talk there, they talk on behalf of all of you. And you also congratulate them for having represented South Africa. You're proud. Those are the words that you have used. Meaning so far they are in the right direction, but you need more interaction with them. So now we are going to have Ms. Emmaline Grill. I'm told it's about 3 to 5 minutes presentation. I understand
She's from employers. Over to you, madam.
Yeah. Hi there. I want to thank you very much for this opportunity. Just to put it quickly in a nutshell, I have lived in Constantia. I've reared my children there, and I've had various maids, excuse the term, but in those days that's what we used. I reared my seven children with consecutive maids that came in and out of my life when I worked there. And then as the years grew on and the children left home one by one, my husband died, and I fell on hard times. And the one work that my friends suggested that I do is going to work as a domestic overseas, because they told me that you could earn a lot of money that way. So I thought, well, if a white lady in South Africa, I can't earn much money here because it's done by our black ladies. So I thought, well, I'll go over there. And one thing and another, I worked for, all in all, I worked for 12 years, coming and going, working as a cook and a cleaner and a carer. And at first, before I went, my friends said, we discussed it, and they said, yes, no, it's not a problem. You can go and work as a servant. It's nothing. Work is work. As long as you just earn your money at the end of the month, it'll be fine. So after 1 year, my first year of that, I realized that work is not just work. There's every single kind of job and every kind of work in the world, and then there is domestic work. It's a completely separate unit, and I think it is because we work in people's homes. But I'm not going to take too much of your time. I would just like very much to take this opportunity to read my letter. I start, and it's called An Open Letter of Apology to All the Maids I've Ever Had, and in Gratitude to Their Loyal Service. With so much in the news about reconciliation, I ask myself what role I can play to help reconstruct a nation torn apart by misunderstanding and hurt. I cast my mind back over the years when I was a typical white, liberal South African madam. We lived in Constantia then, and it was there we reared our large brood with the help of numerous consecutive maids. We were not a typical Constantian family in that we were often strapped for cash. But in the eyes of the ladies, we were well off. Now that the children have all grown up and left home, I reflect on a deep sense of guilt and concern I have for those who worked for me. I feel very strongly how my treatment of them was with so little concern. Not out of malice towards blacks or coloureds, but merely in the spirit of the times. It was the norm not to pay your servant more than a given amount. If I had paid more, other people's servants would surely become dissatisfied with their lot and therefore demand more. God forbid. It was law not to employ staff without a pass. Doing so could get us into serious trouble and we could be charged a hefty fine. We, madams, adhere to that law, and in so doing, left thousands of poor souls out in the cold. But worst of all is the complete disregard and disrespect for who you were, the ignorance of your culture, language, history, and the fact you were far away from your people. Having you daily in my home, standing alongside you at the kitchen sink and not knowing nor caring what suffering brought you there. The times that you walk that long mile to the bus on your one afternoon off. Relief at your return to the location at the weekend and not having to confront your poverty. Not paying you a little extra for babysitting, saying that was part of the deal. The times I've forgotten to go to the bank to get your wages and I asked you to wait until Monday. The times I ignored your disappointment in me, as if it was my prerogative to be insensitive to your needs. Discarding your sadness with a comment, She's moody. Not making your room comfortable, saying they're not used to luxury. Taking advantage of your vulnerability. Being suspicious when an item was mislaid or an art appliance broken. Not acknowledging your enormous value to me. Not giving you that loan when you asked so humbly and needed it so badly. Giving you only a meager Christmas box to take home to your large, expectant family waiting for you back home. Asking you to leave my employ, knowing how you would struggle to find other work. My arrogance. Cooking, cleaning, washing, ironing, bathing children, babysitting, washing dishes, mopping floors, making beds. Why didn't I acknowledge how hard you worked? And I can't even claim ignorance, as I'd done all those chores myself before we could afford help. How did you manage in that small room when your sister and her baby came to stay? You must have been so disappointed in me when I didn't offer a little mattress or an extra plate of food. I thought you had a culture of large eaters, and I already had many mouths to feed. But what a small price to pay for all the help you gave me. Better to rejoice you had company. I thought I had to treat you that way. That was the way we all treated our maids. Mind you, I was one of the few madams who allowed your husband to stay, but I did have the gall to ask if he was your real husband. Dear Lily Jane, Eva, Polly, Herculina, Aniki, Ntombi, Sweetness, Aziza, Rachel, Lientas, Beauty, Violet, Monica, Pumza, universal maids who worked so hard for me at various stages in my life, as well as for my family and friends, those working in domestic service everywhere, universal maids, whose courage, patience, forgiveness and integrity I so admire. I can never thank you enough for the long-suffering help you gave so freely in raising our children. Now that I'm a maid myself, I think of you daily and have become utterly, acutely aware of what it must have been like to work for us madams. And I apologize for myself, and if I could, for all the other madams who so eagerly exploited your desperate plight and shielded behind a cold, insensitive cloak of apartheid. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Grill. It's quite a touching letter. More especially that the letter is written I know that there's no point you have forced you to write that letter. But out of your own experience and later yourself being a domestic worker, you saw it fit that you should reflect on your life in South Africa before 1994 and today. But what I want to say, there is very little that has changed since then in terms of treating domestic workers. There's change because there are laws that are protecting people. But I think that culture of treating domestic workers, we sort of inherited it and continue with it. Traces of it are still there. But I'm sure we will be soon telling the same stories. The same stories will not only come from the white people who exploited us then, ourselves as well. We will be telling those stories in few years to come. It is the spirit of reconciliation that will assist us to go forward, more especially when people come up or come out and talk for themselves. I mean, to say the truth, is something that is hurting. It's like criticism and self-criticism. It's nice to criticize people, but people don't take criticism. They enjoy criticizing other people. That's why I'm bringing it, is to say that that treatment, you will find it that as well we have inherited it. But with the help of the new democratic laws and the existence of a department that has to deal with treatments such as those, very soon such a treatment will be history. I hope there is tea outside, but because we have limitation of time, we will not break for tea. Those people who wish to take at least one by one a break, a short break, they can go out. Those who want tea can go out one by one, so that we spend not much time in having tea, but talking about the issues that have been raised. Now, I will open time for discussions, comments, clarities. Some clarities at time, they come in a form of questions. But the clarities that really need clarity, where people did not understand, I think let's start on those ones, with those ones. If there are none, the clarities that we had will need more discussions. Let's just go straight to discussions. Are there any clarities in terms of misunderstanding what a person was saying? Honorable Ollis.
Chairperson, just a quick one. The first speaker said to us that the 24-hour rule with regards to UIF means that if a domestic worker only works one day a week, that doesn't add up to 24 hours. But if you work an 8-hour day, 8 times 4 is 32. It's more than 24. Did I misunderstand that?
Any more clarity, members? So there is one clarity. I think Ms. Marcus, just go directly to the question, whether I misunderstood you or that's what you're saying.
The 24-hour per month rule pertains to registration for UIF from one employer. Yes, you are correct. If one person works 8 hours a day for one employer, per week, that's 8 times 4. You can come up to 32, as you say. However, those who are working half a day or 4 hours, for example, it doesn't come up to 24. So if I'm working half a day here, Monday is just half, then there is that discrepancy in that they're not covered. But if you were to consider that they're doing the same work elsewhere, it comes to more than 32 in a week, but different employers. Thanks.
I saw Mr. Ollis nodding, meaning that he understands. Now it's time for comments, questions, discussions, members, on the issues that have been raised. Honorable Madisha.
Thanks, Chair. You see, I realize that from the input, the commendations, etc., we are at one. Because I must say that, again, all of us, I believe, know where we come from and from when the democratic government took over. We have been discussing this and so on and so forth. And even looking at the legislative at the Gazette way back 2002 and even before, you had this kind of thing. Now what we need to talk about is that although you had all this, there's not been any proper implementation at all. There's not been implementation. Perhaps that's exactly what we need to talk about. To say that yes, as South African government, etc., we have recognized that these workers must have labor rights like all the workers in the country. There must be human rights like all the workers in the country and a whole lot of other rights. But here, you don't have. So that's exactly what we need to talk about. I mean, here he talks about the overtime work, he talks about the union rights, and et cetera, but the workers there, that is not recognized. Now, what we need to talk about is implementation, and therefore, Mr. Chair, I would say that over and above what we have here is what must be done to make sure that there is implementation, because it will be recognized, yes, of course. But then when it comes to the actual implementation, that does not happen. I mean, if you go to factories, etc., it will to some extent be recognized. People are out on strike now because of that. But it will be very difficult. I think you will know that you will bring together into the streets workers who work in the houses. Why? Because they have a problem. Now, that's exactly what we need to talk about, the actual implementation. Secondly, the usage and exploitation of workers from outside of South Africa. And that is something that has now grown, where, I mean, if you talk about the millions of people in the country who are not employed, at least, and research has been done, up to 1.2 million, at least, people who are supposed to be working, are excluded, basically because of the people who come from outside of South Africa who work in the houses, which then says that the point that she's raising about the people from outside of South Africa now working here, that needs to be looked into, particularly in the houses. How do we deal with that particular point? Because these are people who will work, very many of them, without wanting a cent from the employer, but just to sleep. What do we do? I think that's the recommendation that you need to put forward, to say, you talk about the labor rights, but these people are not interested in being paid, but just to sleep. Secondly, they then are prepared to work for 8,082 hours per year. Again, that has been looked into. 8,082 hours a year, so that they then can be able to get something. What do we do about that? Again, I'm talking here about the implementation. And, you know, all forms of exploitation. Now, it's a major problem. What they should be telling us, Honorable Chair, is what they think we should do. Yes, we understand what ILO is saying, etc. But this is a repetition, Department of Labor, of what has been said for very many years that have passed. But then what do we do then as South Africa to ensure that there is the thing? Last, the trade union recognition is absent. What do we do? Yes, in the Act piece of legislation here, he says through you, Honorable Chair, that that has got to be done. So that when you talk about the issue of the rise, the exploitation thereof, etc., that has got to, workers have got to be encapsulated. We've got to make sure that, yes, indeed, they are covered. But that is not done. The few workers who are leaders here, I believe, will tell you. If you talk about the knowing the actual number of members who are there, it will be very difficult. Why? Because they are unable to come forward and say, we are members of the unions and they were recognized by our employers, etc., etc. It's a major problem. What must we do? I think all those, Chair, are some of the things that we need to look into so that there can be implementation. But then what beyond this thing of recognizing the workers who are there, of making sure that they join the unions, etc., what must be done to make sure that all this that we already have gets implemented? I think exactly that is the point that we need to look into.
I think listening and looking at the presentation, the first one, most of the things are issues that the South African government leading the African group of governments in the ILO, those were issues that were raised. In the main, those were issues that were raised. Especially in, even the one of immigrant domestic workers. In fact, the debate in the ILO has been sparked by the South African government using the sectoral determination that the country has, and also looking at other countries in the continent and in the world, pieces of legislation that they do have that are speaking to domestic work. So then, how then the ILO can come up with a convention which will be an approach by all countries throughout the world? And I think the presentation itself, maybe if the department was requested to make a presentation, they should have covered that. So I that's maybe that is a point, Madam Chairperson. The second point, Chair, you see, the ANC says, working together, we can do more. That's what the ANC says. It has said, it's always saying that, and it's going to continue to say that. That is said in the spirit of anybody who does have information does not necessarily wait to be called in a meeting and say, I'm having this information. Information must be made available and suggestions of how to deal with that matter. And I think I'm raising this because of the suggestions that the social law project has raised. Because the department has to forge partnership with certain with stakeholders that can assist in addressing this matter. Because it's good and I'm saying this because before I came to Parliament, I think 2 or 3 years ago, Honorable Zanzulasi, COSATU in Gauteng had a partnership with the Department of Labor saying, let us, both of us, go to industrial areas and identify companies that are not complying with the labor legislation. So I'm raising this point to say that I think that is an approach that the social law project needs to take in working with the department. How resources will be looked at, it will be an issue at a later stage. And I think you have also cited certain pieces of legislation. I quickly ran to my office. Madam Chair, and I think my LRA is very old, which then means there are less amendments. Because if there are amendments, Mr. Kettle does, obviously I will get a new Labour Relations Act. This is old. So myself, but I think the sections that they've spoken to, in particular section 17 of the LRA and 65 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, those are sections that we need to look at and move forward. What is it that we can do in amending those particular sections? And the last point on me, Madam Chair, is that the trade union that organizes in this sector, I can't remember when, but I've had discussions in the radio trying to popularize not only the trade union itself, but the sectoral determination. What is it that it contains? What are the rights of domestic workers? I think that's good work, which I think we need to appreciate. That has been done by that trade union. In conclusion, and this is the lastly and conclusion, the very other good point that was raised by the social law project, the sport fine, it's like you have been with us all the time. Most of the things that you are raising is issues that are in the pipeline. Because when the department came to Parliament to present its strategy, that was one of the issues. And then Parliament said, no, you need to look hard on this issue. Because the current setup of having to say, if you issue an order, there is time that the employer must think whether to comply or not to comply. So the approach that you raise is what we the department, through the portfolio committee, is looking at, that inspectors of the Department of Labor must work like traffic cops. Because if you have exceeded the speed, you are subjected to a fine, so why not this side? So I'm saying that's another thing, but I think it's a good point that you're raising. Thanks very much, sir.
Honorable Ollis, your hand was up.
Thanks, Chairperson. My question would actually be to the Department of Labor. We have different role players from the Department of Labor. But in terms of what we've heard this morning, the domestic workers' ability to become members of a compensation fund seems to be a problem, and COIDA seems to be a problem. Should we not be proposing amendments to the way membership is constituted for the compensation fund? Should we not be proposing amendments to the Act that governs COIDA as well to assist domestic workers? I mean, quite honestly, if they're being locked out because the details are wrong, because the conditions are wrong. I know there's a question mark about this 24-hour thing. Can we not make adjustments to provide for people? People who are struggling, people who become unemployed quite quickly and then don't have a social network, people who get injured at work and who need support after they're injured at work, or all this kind of things, they're not something we should be doing. Is there draft proposals that we have already got, or do we need to go and draft those? Can we get some input from the department, please?
Any more input from the members? Member Antolase?
Yeah, maybe my question was not slightly answered properly, but let's say it is important that if we are influencing the convention, I should think as South African government we are more prepared to vote for the convention as outlined when it's ready to be adopted.
Because the problem with the process is that it's a final document of ILO which will be there. I've seen I've got documents here which talk a lot of things. But that document might completely be different when that convention is signed. And the convention will always give us preamble, what are the duties, what the member countries should do, and all that and all that. So that the member country from ILO is coming back to formulate a policy. So if the meeting is asking us to say, please, when this document is concluded, this is what we want in, I should think, as South African government, we are willing to do that. But I also want to say there are processes coming, particularly the unions who are in the labor market chamber in NEDLAC. Already this decent job processes in NEDLAC is there. Domestic worker decent work is there in NEDLAC in the labor chamber. We are going to formulate legislation, we are going to amend all the labor market policies, like law, social law said. But that process is more effective, I should think, that we influence it from the community perspective at NEDLAC. We go there, we go and influence, so that when we move this side, like you are here, but the process is run at market labor market chamber in NEDLAC. It's on, it's moving. We need to influence that so that when we run the public hearings, we are going to run public hearings on all labor amendments. We must ensure that what social laws have said is very close to my heart. But I want us to do it in an effective way that is going to benefit. I don't want you to come here tomorrow and say, but we made that portfolio policy and nothing happened. So the process at NEDLAC, at the labor market chamber, is the most appropriate one, that we influence it with immediate effect because it's on. When we run public hearings, we'll like to hear all what social labor has said now, because we are going to amend all the labor market legislation. So that at least we are effective on these issues, and we are there. The unions, on the matter of them being unionized, social laws, I think the General Secretary will tell you that we did have old domestic workers' union, which the problem is the collection of subscriptions. They can join all money, the employers put money in their pocket at the end, that union is suffering. Maybe in the near future, then it's negotiated. You also put factor that in, how you easily can access your subs through whether UIF or whatever administratively, because it's a nightmare for the union in the domestic workers. I think we all agree. We all agree what we are saying. But I don't want you, when you see the convention and say Parliament Portfolio Committee didn't tell us the truth, because it's written differently. It does give member countries instruction or guidelines how they must formulate their country policies. It is us. The labor is much more effective, even the social law, because they can go there with community and ensure that when this negotiation of decent work at NEDLAC is done, they are actually having all what they're saying. And we need to know sometimes some of these processes. EEE is there to deal with CD7. You make that presentation to the ECC. Ensure that what you say, ECC took it into cognizance when they review their CD9, their CD7. Because the CD7, the problem of CD7 is that it's a determination of a minister and the presentation you have made to ECC. So I should think we need to use all these processes. We are not saying we are not going to assist you on this one, but I'm saying those are the effective structures which are in the process now, where we can influence them now with immediate effect in that labor market chamber. But ECC, write a letter, I don't know how long CD7 is ending, but just 12 months before CD7 is done, you must make submission. And thereafter, before 12 months it has been done, you can still write back to the minister and say, see, CD7, we are not happy with this. Then they will give you a hearing. And the domestic worker, Comrade Becky, is sitting there and the Duzimbongwe. So that at least we are effective in this thing. And I think the law, social law, whatever, is one of the very good components to assist the community to ensure that all what we want in those labor legislation coming to be amended now, we effectively amend that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Rantola. There's a hand from Honorable Nyekemba. Please go on.
Thank you, sir. I'm getting old, so I normally forget other points that I wanted to raise. Please bear with me. I think just 2 points. I just want to restate what I said earlier in relation to that stop flying, saying that it's part of the pieces of legislation that we're seeking to amend. But I think it's important to indicate that the process of the labor legislation amendment, what we normally do as parliament, we identify areas and then say the department must stop and deal with the process. So those is not amendments which are at the social partners where they are being discussed, for instance, at the level of NEDLAC, because it's still a draft, it's still with the department. There are other processes that need to be followed in relation to that. I thought it's important, Madam Chair, to raise this point. Secondly, the last one is that the social law project made mention of working conditions where you will find a situation where if a domestic worker is from outside South Africa, and then the treatment and the conditions will not be the same. I think it's one area that we need to give much thought on it, because the Labor Relations Act does not necessarily force collective bargaining. Instead, it says that trade unions in a particular sector and employers, they can come together and form a bargaining council in that particular sector. And that is also determined. There has to be a threshold as to how many employees who are unionized in that particular sector. So I'm taking the point, but also I think it's important for me to indicate that what is also the difficulty, and it means we need to look at the labor legislation, how are we supposed to deal with those matters moving forward. That's why, in fact, in the domestic sector, there is a sectoral determination. In a way, it's because it's difficult to establish a bargaining council. It's because of this one employer in this corner, and then this worker is a member of the union. Next door is not a member of the union. So it needs a strength of workers in order to have a bargaining council where you know that collective bargaining issues will be dealt with at that central level, and then everybody else will benefit in that industry. I wanted to just raise those 2 points, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nyekemba. Honorable Tsokwe, and the floor is open to other people who are at the House who want to say something on the presentations that were made. Honorable Tsokwe.
Thank you, Chair. I from where I am, I don't think really we are doing justice to this debate. From day one, domestic work was never recognized as work, because you. My main worry in this case is we don't seem to be having adequate information. We don't have to be having adequate research. Because domestic work by its nature is a little complex. Because by virtue of them not working under one roof, you can imagine how difficult it is to find them, to reach them. Because many a times when you read this document, majority of the research available, information available currently in the past, they mainly concentrate in meta centers, as if South Africa is only in Johannesburg, in Cape Town, in Pietermaritzburg, in Nelspruit, in Durban only. What about the greater South Africa? What about the farming communities? Because you also found these workers even there. So I would think we would want to need more research on this, more information made available to all of us, so that we're able to debate from that kind of perspective as to what exactly are we saying, because from day one, domestic work was never recognized as work. You find in this area they call them helpers. In this area, they call them names. In this area, they call them this and that. But the impression we give every time we make presentation is that we seem to be representing majority of the views of what we're saying, but it's not. Because you're talking about major centers only. What about the greater South Africa, where these workers are located? So I think we need more information in order to find justification of what we're trying to say, as we are saying now. But for me, from where I am, from where I'm coming from, not enough. The information available about domestic workers, their rights as workers, their rights as human beings, it's not adequate. For me, unless somebody can persuade me otherwise. But I'm not convinced. I'm not yet persuaded from where I'm coming from.
Thank you, members. Any more people want to make some input from the side? I see Ms. Marcus's name. Any other person? Gentleman over there. Okay, some more questions. It's fine. Let me start with you, Ms. McCarthy, and then after you, it will be a gentleman next to you. And and the lady here, I've noted your hand. And then the many. Let's start with the three hands, and then we'll continue. Over to you.
Thank you, Ms. Chairperson. I think I have to respond by saying that let's not forget who a domestic worker is. A domestic worker, in most instances, is someone who got into the field not by choice, but by circumstances. In some instances, it's someone who is illiterate, someone who has to feed families at home, and they're in an urban city, not by choice. Unfortunately, our research was conducted only in terms of a sample. I acknowledge that it's not a representative sample, and perhaps then through better resources, we can extend it to the greater South Africa, as you have suggested, point noted, and target the rural community, especially those poor rural communities, as well as the townships, as I've already mentioned. But I have to say that we're not the first ones who've done research in this area. Ours is more current because it was done in 2009, 2010. But prior to us, there have been other organizations. The words "working together, we can do more" were used earlier on. We're not here as the only ones who are researchers in this field. We joined hands today with LRF. We've joined hands with Black Sesh. We're here working with DOL, not against DOL. we're here with the agencies, and most importantly, we are working with SASSA, with domestic workers themselves. So we have to take cognizance of the factors that are in front of us when we conduct research as we have done in the past. And using platforms such as today, we realize that this is not the end. However, we accepted the invite with a smile because we realize that we're able to share not just with stakeholders that we've been talking to, but with others that we haven't been able to address. And we're sharing not just what we have found, but what everybody else has been saying. And we are hoping, as was mentioned, that this will be taking forward. I've heard that some of these issues have been looked into already, but if we do not continue pressurizing platforms such as these in order to see to it that such issues are taken forward, then they are not going to receive the pressure that they deserve. Towards the end of my presentation, I was pressed for time, so I quickly wrapped up, but I should have mentioned that dialogue such as today about a means to an end. It was mentioned earlier on that South African government was represented at the convention at the ILO. Some of the people in this room were in that convention. Social Law Project was at that convention with SASSAU, making presentations to the ILO in terms of what should be done by member states of the ILO in terms of pushing forward for a convention for domestic workers. That will be done or formalized next year, sometime in June, July, I think, under correction. However, at ground level, we all have a responsibility to see to it that whilst that is being done, we're not sitting back and waiting for the ILO to come up with a convention for domestic workers. Before that is done, it will be binding on all member states. But what is South Africa doing? We firstly have to address the loopholes, so that by the time that is binding on South Africa, we've cleaned our house. There's no conflicting legislation. There are no loopholes. And most importantly, all the stakeholders, as we are all working together today, we are on the same page. Some are not in this room, I acknowledge. We will work towards making sure that we are all on the same page and that we are driving the same cause as we always have been from different corners. But we first have to see to it that SA has got its house in order. By the time that the convention comes and is binding on SA, we've got our house in order. Thank you.
Thank you. I know we have introduced each other's name, but it's difficult to keep everybody's name. So whenever someone has to speak, must tell us who he or she is and the organization, and then you can talk.
My name is Salim Patel from the Labor Research Service. It's a trade union-based NGO that does information and research and education. Thank you for giving me a chance to speak. Actually, I just want to raise a few questions, and it comes out from this issue that's been raised quite extensively about information and access to information. In trying to do research and to try and assist the trade union, one of the things we find is that it's not easy to access supposed to be quite easily accessible information. So, for instance, how many domestic workers are there in Cape Town? Now, if we are paying UIF, then surely there must be some record of how many are paying UIF that are staying in Cape Town. And maybe not just Cape Town, it would be nice to know how many is staying in Constantia, how many is staying in Langa, how many is staying in Mitchell's Plain, because there must be somewhere, it must be, you know, yes, maybe someone will have to do it and do it, you know, but it can be obtained. Now, is there a problem with doing that, or does the Department of Labor do that? Do they need assistance in doing that? Can it be done, or can we not access those UIF records to do this kind of work? It assists us to know when we want to do a survey, how do we decide on what sample to take? When we want to organize for the union, where are the areas where there's a lot of weight? and so on. So I'm saying that kind of information, which is something that I think is can be done quite easily and should be done quite... I mean, if in the labor force survey we know, you know, there's 888,000... Well, that was the one released in for the first quarter. I think the second quarter one is out, but it was 888,000. That was down from 1.2 million a year ago. So we've lost 300,000 domestic workers, jobs. Where did we lose them? We're not sure. But anyway, I'm just saying that kind of information, I think it's possible to get, and if it is there somewhere, is there no way that we can make it available? I think just knowing that kind of basic information will assist and go a long way. The other issue, so that's my question really to the Department of Labor and probably from parliamentarians who need information, because there's no way they can drive any process if they don't have information. The second issue is on social dialogue processes and how do we ensure that happens. Yes, there's NEDLAC, and I think NEDLAC is a good area, but for a sector of workers that are highly unorganized, that are not, don't find themselves in the realm of the mainstream, we need to sometimes create extra social dialogue processes. So issues of how the hearings that take place for the sectoral determination happen in communities where we find more domestic workers. Let them participate in the process. I think those are things that we need to think about constructively. There's also the issue of involving the employers' organizations. Now, nothing here has been said about actual standards and how we're going to begin to understand what this sector is about. Because it's about health, it's about cleaning, it's about, you know, if you look at the kind of work they do, it goes all the sectors. But at some point we must begin to tackle these difficult questions. Otherwise we will always leave it as, you know, it's just work. So I think the employers may also be interested in because they can help us and looking at how they're beginning to structure this industry, and we can have a dialogue around it. But it should be unlike maybe other sectors where work was crafted for us. Maybe this is an area where we can begin to say what the standards are together. So I think those are just issues that I'm raising as questions, and I think that the Department of Labor can assist in helping all the organizations here work with. Thank you.
Thank you. The gentleman next to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Darcy Detoy, Social Law Project, UWC. I think there's one red line, if you like, that runs through many of the contributions made today, and that is that we are not speaking simply of making minor adjustments to existing laws which work quite well. We are talking here, I think, of a paradigm shift, and what makes that happen. I agree with all the, if you like, technical points made. I mean, one certainly can look at Section 65 of the BCA and so on, but I personally don't think that would make the fundamental difference, in the sense that even if the department had another 20 inspectors in the Western Cape, and there are 14 sectoral determinations to police, if you like, plus all the statutes, it's not going to make a huge dent. The fact that one or two employers might keep them out, I don't think that that's where the real problem lies. I think the problem lies in attitudes and mindset. We listened to a very moving open letter by a former employer, and I think perhaps one way of putting it is to say that when a critical mass of employers of domestic workers in this country see things in that way, then we shall have a paradigm shift. Now, how do we make that happen? And I think domestic workers and their empowerment have a lot to do with it. In other words, for the domestic workers themselves to meet the employers as empowered, equal human beings who deserve to be taken seriously and respected, that I think helps make a paradigm shift. So that's where the unions come in and where all the awareness raising comes in.
But I think one can be, I can just make two examples perhaps to be brief. We are about to see a new minimum wage discussed, and I think if that discussion remains at the level of should it be 7%, 8%, or 10%, I think it won't raise consciousness very much. It will become a commercial haggling process. But I think this notion and the ILO recommendation or convention might speak to this. Why do we have only one minimum wage for domestic workers? Are they all on the same level of skill? And I think internationally it's becoming accepted that domestic work can be a highly skilled occupation. It can involve relatively unskilled activity, but also highly skilled activity. Child caring, for example, working with quite complicated machinery in the house, and so on. What about if we get wage differentiation? In other words, if sexual discrimination 7 were to start differentiating between levels of skill, maybe treat the existing minimum wage as that for the entry level, but for different levels of skill have higher wages, then I think we will see an increase in real wages, perhaps by more than 1 or 2%, and also employers, I think, will not simply feel I'm being forced to pay more for the same. And also they will begin to realize that actually these individuals do possess skills. It also would be an incentive for domestic workers themselves to wish to acquire more skills, because that is the way to improvement. And also it will create demand. CETAs have been mentioned. If there are 200,000 domestic workers out there clamoring for training in various areas of work, then I think CETAs will be under more pressure and other instances. That's one example, and I personally would love it if we can, you know, influence the discussion to move in that direction to differentiate between different levels of skill when it comes to wage setting. And the only other example I want to mention is, and this goes beyond the Department of Labour, this probably goes to another portfolio committee and another department, but The government of this country is under a constitutional duty to implement rights to social security along with all other basic rights, and domestic workers, in addition to the valuable economic input they make, are also playing a very, very important role in providing social security in the form of care for the aged, care for those who need care, children, and so on. Government I don't think has the resources to provide that from the Department of Social Welfare. But if there are still, I believe, close to 1 million domestic workers out there who are in this field, who are in a position to provide important aspects of social security, should that not be recognized as something which the state ultimately is responsible for providing the training, the skills, and the financial backing. That's another point that I would like to see our research and the discussion in future to be pursuing. And one could extend the list. I mean, I noticed that there were some smiles when the question of tax relief was mentioned. But I mean, we do have some incongruities that if a business person takes a colleague and a partner to dinner, costing 2,000 rand, that can be claimed as tax deductible. It's a business expense. Whereas paying UIF contributions for domestic workers is not tax deductible. I'm not saying that necessarily should be what happens, but can't one look more creatively at giving the same, placing the same value on investment made by employers, if you like, in this case, in the development and improvement of conditions of domestic workers as they do to entertaining a business guest. So I will leave it at that, but I think it's a debate which we need to take beyond the nuts and bolts. I think it is getting out of the box and finding ways, levers, that actually would have an impact on the way people see things, and in that way I think the debate could be taken forward significantly. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, my name is Christine, gaan Afrikaans praat. Ek wil julle net 'n kykie gee in die lewe van 'n huiswerker. Ek is op oomblik 20 jaar met die gesin. Ek het by hulle kom werk toe ek 'n seun van 3 maande oud en hy is gestrem. En toe ek nou die kind moet dokter sien en alles toe, moet ek hom opbring om met my te kom bly. Hulle het nie probleme gehad nie. Ek is een van die gelukkiges wat met my kind kan bly om by die groot hospitale te wees. Maar ek dink aan die duisende daar buite wat werk meer van hulle kinders af. Hulle kinders is gestrem. Is hulle so difficult. So ek voel dis net reg as 'n huiswerker met 'n kind, as die kind 'n probleem het, om by hom te wees. Want hy eerste paar jaar moet die kind met die moeder wees. En want as ek sê maar bijvoorbeeld my werker, sy het 'n gestrepte kind, sy gaan uit werk toe, ek moet na die kind omsien. En ek is nie net 'n domestic worker nie. Ek is, as hulle kinders uit die skool uitkom, moet ek saam met hulle kinders sit, ek is 'n onderwyser, ek is 'n skoonmaker, sy kan het seer kry, ek is 'n nurse.
This is a second, we did not arrange for interpretation. Can someone in the house assist us with interpretation? Mr. Kettle does? Can you try? Little, please.
I think what I've heard so far is that she is a domestic worker. She has a 3-month-old son that is disabled. That's what I can pick up from.
Olis, can you assist as well, honorable?
Yes.
Yes. Sorry.
Is it Isien wat gestremd is of die mense waar hy werk? Well, say it again.
And at least she's close to a hospital or is to where she can take the child to.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
yeah, he was 3 months old and he is now, he's turning 20, he's at the moment at Westernova High School, he's in matric. And I'm one of the fortunates that did end up with a family like that. But what I feel for the ones out there that also maybe have disabled children, and that's not with the children, they also must hear what the doctor said if they phone home. And I think it will make their life so more easy if they can have the child with them. Even if the child only have to see the doctor in 3 months for that period to stay with the mother. But, okay, that's that. When I started working with this family, they had a 2.5-year-old, and the one was 6. I was a teacher for their children when the parents work. When they came from school, I have to sit and see that they do their homework. If they hurt them, they come running to me for plaster. So I, a domestic worker, is not only a cleaner. She's a teacher, she's a nurse, she's a cook, she do the ironing. Sometimes she's an advisor. Sometimes there's a whole lot of things. And I think mostly we don't get the recognition for that. And whereby there's a lot of girls out there that get treated very badly. Some of them, when we speak to them, they always say, what will my employer say if I join a union? Then we advise them they don't have to know. Because we that belong to a union now, our employers knows about it because we make it our mission to tell them that we belong to a union. But what I found where I work, most of the employees, they told their girls not to be friends with me because I'm too clever. they said. But the domestic union, the domestic worker really needs your support. We too, your support to take us, take our hand and walk with us through this. Especially Saturday, my president told me, was another worker come and visit her. This worker, she's working for people, but she was not allowed to go in the morning. She was allowed to go in 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Then she had to clean the double story house before night time. And I mean, that's not on. That's exploiting. And, yeah, domestic work out there, we suffer. Some, not all of them, there is, like they said earlier, there is, like the chair said earlier, there is good employers, but there is ones that knows, they know the laws, but they don't think, do anything about it. And then I want to say something about the migrant workers. We had a workshop whereby some of the workers wants to fight them. And we said to them, no, they mustn't. We must embrace them. We need all these people to build our union. And I feel the people that we have to target is the employer that employs that migrant worker, because they know the rules. They know they are not allowed to pay that a migrant worker differently as they will pay the other worker. I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ma. Please.
Thank you. Thank you. sorry. I'm Jonathan Grossman, working with a project called Nasabelane, which has worked with SADWU as it was in the 1980s and NADWU as it was in the 1990s and SATSAWU as it now is. I would also like to say that I'm a proud member of Nahawu, in case I look different to that, who's very proudly in support of the public sector workers on strike. There are 4 points I'd like to make. The first one is about the urgency of what we're talking about. I would hate us to see us hiding behind the fact that there's an ILO process underway, which means that everything gets put on hold while we wait for the delays of the ILO. And I would particularly like to make that point in this room, because we sat in this room in 1997 when the Basic Conditions of Employment Act and extension to domestic workers was under discussion. That's a long time ago. And we pointed to precisely the problems that we are pointing to today. Exactly. Precisely 100% the same problems. We said that there would be non-compliance. We said that there would be a lack of information and misinformation. We said that there would be inadequacy of enforcement mechanisms. That was in 1997. And I'm not repeating those things because somebody who said it was clever. I'm repeating those things because how much pain and suffering and wasted knowledge has gone on since 1997? Didn't start in 1997, but I'm just using that date because that's the first time we had such a sitting around law in relation to domestic workers. The second point I'd like to make is about the content. I've listened to and very grateful for the contributions which have been made. There has been a tendency to bash the Department of Labor. It's legitimate. I also do my bashing, and I'm not here to defend the Department of Labor. But the Department of Labor has to enforce laws, and the Department of Labor doesn't make those laws. And we have identified repeatedly obstacles in the laws which are made by Parliament, laws which ostensibly protect domestic workers, who are amongst the most vulnerable, and end up with a series of exemptions and exclusions of the kind which we've seen again today, which mean that the most vulnerable workers are not protected. So the worker who most needs an inspector from the Department of Labor to go to her workplace The Department of Labor Inspector can't do that. The worker who most needs safety in her workplace, her employer is entitled to smoke that worker to death because it's a private home and we have a constitution which protects private property over and above the health of a domestic worker. So as much as we might like to say that enforcement is the problem, and for sure it's a problem, the content of the laws which have to be enforced is also a problem. Which one of us sitting here is really in our hearts going to be able to say that once that pitifully low minimum wage is paid to domestic workers, we have solved the problem? We haven't solved the problem. The protection in law, as well as the restrictions and exclusions in law, constitute a cycle of poverty and vulnerability for domestic workers. If we want to get out of that, we're going to have to break that dramatically. The third point I'd like to make has been made by Christine and other workers already, and I'm very proud to follow Christine, who's somebody who's taught me many of the things I'm now trying to say to you. Domestic workers are teachers. We've got a teachers' strike going on, and I read in the newspaper how terrible it is that some children are not being taught by the teachers. Strikes happen, and they have my support. But domestic workers are teachers, and I don't read in the newspaper that they're providing an essential public service. But they're doing it day after day after day after day. And at the end we say, some of us and others outside and the newspapers, that they are just domestic workers, or they are only domestic workers, or they are doing women's work, or they are unproductive in terms of the development of the economy. And yet at the time of the strike we take teachers and we say this is absolutely, absolutely essential. Millions of black women, mothers, domestic workers are doing that work every day. They're nurses, they give caring. Domestic workers subsidize employers. There's an employer here from Constanta. There are domestic workers who will tell you stories of how when the employer becomes ill, let's say with diabetes, the care of the employer is entrusted to the domestic worker, who becomes a cheapened nurse because to get a nurse in is going to cost more. So the domestic worker is providing the care. She's an essential caregiver. But she's denigrated as just a domestic worker, and she's paid less than even a nurse is paid, so she subsidizes the employer. There are many hundreds of thousands of women who are providing care, sometimes without pay, because we're talking about paid domestic workers. And we know, all of us, I'm sure, that so much of the domestic work in this country is unpaid. It's done by black women who are not paid for doing that work, but they are doing it. So they're providing an essential public service through care. And yet, at the end of the day, they're again going to be told that that's domestic work. And when nurses go on strike, that's an essential public service, and we scream and we shout and we bleat about that. But the domestic work is providing a subsidy to the government because she is providing social services which are not being fully paid for. And that's completely unrecognized. So that takes me to the last point I'd like to make, that we talk about respect for domestic work. I think that domestic work is an essential public service. This country or any other country wouldn't run without that domestic work being provided. So when we talk about a mindset, we're talking about recognizing as socially necessary the work which these millions mainly of women do every single day. And until we get into that, we're going to repeat these kinds of cycles, in which we point to problems in the law. That was 1997, that's 14 years ago, then it will be the ILO. I don't want to sound negative about it, but we have correctly been told that we don't have sufficient information. Sometimes, unfortunately, colleagues, we have wasted information. We know too much about the pain and the suffering and the denigration of domestic workers. So I'm pleading to all of us that we use that knowledge and act with some kind of urgency about it.
Thank you. Any more hands? Madam?
My name is Celeste Irahai. I'm from St. Paul. I hear what you say about domestic workers and all. I just want to tell what I went through, my experience as a domestic worker. My choice wasn't to be a domestic worker, but I was forced to be one because where I lived, there was no high school to attend. So I had to go and work for other people. And it was bad experiences. And up to now, I got married and I had my children. And I told myself that my children will never become a cleaner in nobody's house. I might be one, my grandmother was one, and it went down generations. What I want to say is here that it's not easy for a domestic worker out there. That is why we want recognition. We want recognition from Parliament, our government, to see us there as human. Because we go out and we go work for other people, we earn money that we get, that salary is not enough. Because a domestic worker can't go out for a loan to buy a house. The minute they hear you're a domestic worker, then they say, no, we sorry, we don't have domestic workers. So where must the domestic workers go to then if they are not recognized? I bought a house, I was one of the lucky ones to buy a house, but it was a struggle to get a house because when you finish working, you want to go home, but you can't, you must stay on the property of the people that you work for. And even when you're off, you are still working because the children come and the children want that and the children want this and that and that. So my children today are educated, which I long for all domestic workers to give to their children. Today, I have a registered business as a cleaning service. So to help other domestic workers, I don't see to teach domestic workers a skill to stay a domestic worker. There are skills out there, but it's just that we can't get out of that skills. And when I came to the union, I've learned a lot of things. I learned how to speak to my employees. And today my employees are standing behind me. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Madame De La. Speaker is going to be Mr. Kettledust.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and committee members, and everybody that is here. I would deal with it in two parts. The one is just around the process in the ILO. It is significant, of course, that South Africa was chosen to be the spokesperson for the African group. But it also places an obligation upon us to ensure that when the discussion takes place next year, that we have strengthened the African common position in the discussions there. And in doing so, we will engage with our colleagues in SADC, in the employment and labor sector, as well as the African Union Labor and Social Affairs Commission before the conference next year, so as to strengthen our participation there and also the African common position. Secondly, just to respond to or to deal with some of the issues raised in the discussions, I must say this has been very useful. It's given a lot of thought that the things that one should think about in policy formulation as well as the enforcement side. But there's also information that we can share. Just for example, with regard to registration with the UIF, we have currently registered in the by last month 643,346 domestic workers, working for 595,942 domestic employers. And just in the month of July,
1,325 domestic employers had been registered. So if, as was indicated in the social law project area, that there was a sample of employers that did not understand about registration of UIF, it's probably an area that we should then target to get those employers to register. And these kinds of studies are useful because then it assists us in targeting. Because if you look at the labor force survey statistics on the number of domestic employees or domestic workers, 888,000, and we have already registered 643,000, then we are getting close to a full registration of domestic workers. Of course, we assume that the labor force statistics are accurate and correct, so that you then deduct 643,000 from 888,000, and then we must find where those are, so that we can then target those areas. The second issue is regarding the review of the sectoral determination. Honorable Ransulase had asked the question, when is it expiring? It's expiring November 2011. Now, from about April of next year, we are then going to embark on a consultation process on public hearings. And what we should work together, working together, we can do more. Working with the domestic workers' unions, with projects like these, we must maximize the participation in those public hearings. And we must, in consultation, target the venues correctly. Because sometimes the venue is wrong, where domestic workers can't have access to. So we must, in consultation with the stakeholders, work out the places and venues where we are going to have the public hearing so that we get maximum participation by both workers and employers. So that when the public, when the report goes to the Employment Conditions Commission, it is a comprehensive report, it is reflective of the situation on the ground and reflective of the conditions that people want changed on the ground. So we would appeal that we have to work together in that process of the public hearings. On the issue of the dealing with undocumented workers, are covered by, regulated by immigration legislation, which is domestic, which is the Department of Home Affairs. When inspectors do find undocumented people, they will liaise with the Department of Home Affairs about that. And in terms of immigration legislation, any employer in this country that has employed people illegally from outside do have to carry the repatriation costs. But coming to the conditions of employment side, our legislation do not distinguish between a foreigner and a local or a national. And where our inspectors find somebody working and the employer don't apply the same conditions and the same wages, that employer is liable to correct that. So there is no distinction that migrant workers should be exploited. The legislation does not provide for that. They have to get the same wages where they do the same work. They're subject to the same conditions of employment as the others within that particular sector. So there's no distinction there. On the issue of the coverage of the domestic workers by the compensation fund, I'm aware that this is a matter that is being addressed by the compensation fund. I don't have the details now, but we can follow up with the compensation fund as to where the process is. But it is a matter that they were going to deal with. The issue of it was acknowledged that some progress has been made, but we have to indicate that a lot more can be done, and it is good these processes help us to identify the gaps, and I think that there we can then work together in order to address the areas where there are gaps. So Jefferson, I know that there's a pressure of time. We don't have time to go into detailed discussion of all of us, but I'm sure that the discussions are not going to end today. It's a process, and there'll be many more engagements, and we would also deal directly with the union where it's necessary for us to engage, but also with the social law project if there are any matters that we need to follow up. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ketsel. The few words from the organizer of the sessions, Ms. Komo.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just say a few things, which I'm not going to repeat all the things that have been said. I think the basic thing is that we appreciate the space to engage, and I think for us, probably, we're feeling our hearts are warmed up because we achieved what you wanted. What you wanted was the social dialogue, a space where we engage on issues and where policymakers are hearing on our own issues. And it was important for us to build on the political solidarity that had emerged in the ILO convention between government and workers, that we see that political solidarity emerging in a national context, but also around the amendments that are required to tighten up our own regulations. But I think it was also about the issue to collectively reflect on the fact that while we may have noble laws that are in place, but there are weaknesses around enforcement and where we need to tighten up the borders. We appreciate, I think, as civil society organizations, appreciate the progress that is made, and we will continue to contribute in that process. We take the invitation, the open invitation by the Department of Labor, that we should actually maximize our participation, all the amendments that are on the table will certainly ensure that to participate in that effectively. But however, one of the key areas that we would have liked to hear the comments from was in our midst we have labor brokers, and we know that it's a sore point in terms of actually exacerbating a lot of exploitation of domestic workers, whether it's domestic workers who are South Africans, but as well who are migrant workers. But we invited them, particularly because we thought from an ethical perspective, it was important that we interrogate how they work, how the contractual obligations that they normally enter to with the workers, but as well to bring them into the circle that this is what we seek to achieve in this sector. And when we talk about transformation, we would like labor brokers to be part of that process. But also want to put on the table to the committee as well that we would like to see actually progress in the fast-tracking around labor brokers so that we know exactly what it is that we're dealing with. And as well as perhaps my last point is related to the fact that we're not doing justice in terms of dealing with these issues openly. And I would like to propose a national session dialogue between civil society organizations, labor brokers, and employers, who will then unpack and present solid proposal on the different areas. I think the call for domestic workers as being public servant and subsidizing the economy, we need to see that being captured in a more a solid and comprehensive framework in terms of the law, but taking into account the issues of paradigm shifts that professor spoke to on changing the mindset of employers. I think as we walk out of this room today, we need to walk into our homes and begin to value the service that is provided to by domestic workers, but also linking that directly on issues of women's emancipation. Because if we continue to subject women into this kind of exploitative environment, it actually means that we undermine and regressing some of the progress that we've made around women's rights. Because the work that they do is very much direct into them, ensuring that they actually enjoy their rights. And we truly appreciate, I think it is our wish that this dialogue does not end in here. We understand the need to engage in other spaces like NEDLAG and anywhere else, but directly interacting with committee members is always the best benefit, because immediately you can get solid responses from the committee, because this is an institution that is entrusted with lawmaking processes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Komo. That was a closing remark from the lady who has organized this dialogue that we have today in Parliament. And we thank everybody, including yourself, for having got us under one roof today. And I think the call that says this is not the end, it should not be the end of dialogue, we support it. And she has made a direct call that we should have a national dialogue I'm sure that will be the dialogue that will give the mandate to the department before they go to ILO next year, so that the issues that the public or the organizations that are here and the others that are not here feel that they should be strengthened when they are representing South Africa, they will be discussed in that dialogue. So in that national dialogue that we're going to have. So I'm sure the department has opened its hands in terms of letters and any kind of information or any type, any form of information to them and the court. So I think from now on, we will see a number of these sessions. Be it sessions with domestic workers and employers and department, or be it the sessions, sessions of all the stakeholders that are here, domestic workers included as well. So I think with those few words, we thank you, and we have come to the end of our discussions. The meeting is adjourned.